Chapter 92. Jog-trot life, the same from day to day, would reconcile one to anything. One don't see anything, one don't hear anything, one don't know anything. That's the fact. We go on taking everything for granted, and so we go on, until whatever we do, good, bad, or indifferent, we do from habit. Habit is all I shall have to report when I am called upon to plead to my conscience on my deathbed. Habit, says I was deaf, dumb, blind, and paralytic to a million things from habit. Very businesslike indeed, Mr. What's your name? Apostrophe says conscience, but it won't do here. Apostrophe, the gentleman got up and walked to the window again and back. Seriously uneasy, though giving his uneasiness this peculiar expression. Miss Harriet, apostrophe he said, resuming his chair, I wish you would let me serve you. Look at me, I ought to look honest, for I know I am so, at present. Do I? Apostrophe, yes, apostrophe she answered with a smile. I believe every word you have said, apostrophe he returned. I am full of self-reproach, that I might have known this, and known you and seen you, any time these dozen years, and that I never have. I hardly know how I ever got here creature that I am, not only of my own habit, but of other people's, but having done so, let me do something. I ask it in all honor and respect. You inspire me with both, in the highest degree. Let me do something. Apostrophe, we are contented, sir. Apostrophe, no, no, not quite, apostrophe returned the gentleman. I think not quite. There are some little comforts that might smooth your life, and his. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he repeated, fancying that it made some impression on her. I have been in the habit of thinking that there was nothing wanting to be done for him, that it was all settled and over. In short, of not thinking at all about it. I am different now. Let me do something for him. You too, apostrophe said the visitor, with careful delicacy, have need to watch your health closely, for his sake, and I fear it fails. Apostrophe, whoever you may be, sir, apostrophe answered Harriet, raising her eyes to his face, I am deeply grateful to you. I feel certain that in all you say, you have no object in the world but kindness to us. But years have passed since we began this life, and to take from my brother any part of what has so endeared him to me, and so proved his better resolution any fragment of the merit of his unassisted, obscure, and forgotten reparation would be to diminish the comfort it will be to him and me when that time comes to each of us, of which you spoke just now. I thank you better with these tears than any words. Believe it, pray. The gentleman was moved, and put the hand she held out to his lips, much as a tender father might kiss the hand of a dutiful child, but more reverently. If the day should ever come, said Harriet, when he is restored, in part, to the position he lost, apostrophe, restored. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the gentleman, quickly. How can that be hoped for? In whose hands does the power of any restoration lie? It is no mistake of mine, surely, to suppose that his having gained the priceless blessing of his life is one cause of the animosity shown to him by his brother. Apostrophe, you touch upon a subject that is never breathed between us, not even between us, apostrophe said Harriet. I beg your forgiveness, apostrophe said the visitor. I should have known it. I entreat you to forget that I have done so, inadvertently. And now, as I dare urge no more, as I am not sure that I have a right to do so, though heaven knows, even that doubt may be habit, apostrophe said the gentleman, rubbing his head, as despondently as before, let me, though a stranger, yet no stranger, ask two favors. Apostrophe, what are they? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she inquired. The first, that if you should see cause to change your resolution, you will suffer me to be at your right hand. My name shall then be at your service. It is useless now, and always insignificant. Apostrophe, our choice of friends, apostrophe, she answered, smiling faintly, is not so great that I need any time for consideration. I can promise that. Apostrophe, the second, that you will allow me sometimes, say every Monday morning, at 9 o'clock. Habit again, I must be businesslike. Apostrophe, said the gentleman, with a whimsical inclination to quarrel with himself on that head, and walking past, to see you at the door window. I don't ask to come in, as your brother will be gone out at that hour. I don't ask to speak to you. I merely ask to see, for the satisfaction of my own mind, that you are well, and without intrusion to remind you, by the sight of me, that you have a friend, an elderly friend, gray-haired already, and fast growing grayer, whom you may ever command. Apostrophe, the cordial face looked up in his, confided in it, and promised. I understand, as before, apostrophe, said the gentleman, rising, that you purpose not to mention my visit to John Carker, lest he should be at all distressed by my acquaintance with his history. I am glad of it, for it is out of the ordinary course of things, and habit again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the gentleman, checking himself impatiently, as if there were no better course than the ordinary course. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with that he turned to go, and walking, bareheaded, to the outside of the little porch, took leave of her with such a happy mixture of unconstrained respect and unaffected interest, as no breeding could have taught, no truth mistrusted, and nothing but a pure and single heart expressed. Many half-forgotten emotions were awakened in the sister's mind by this visit. It was so very long since any other visitor had crossed their threshold. It was so very long since any voice of apathy had made sad music in her ears, that the stranger's figure remained present to her, hours afterwards, when she sat at the window, plying her needle, and his words seemed newly spoken, again and again. He had touched the spring that opened her whole life. And if she lost him for a short space, it was only among the many shapes of the one great recollection, of which that life was made. Musing and working by turns, now constraining herself to be steady at her needle for a long time together, and now letting her work fall, unregarded, on her lap, and straying wheresoever her busier thoughts led, Harriet Carker found the hours glide by her, and the day steal on. The morning, which had been bright and clear, gradually became overcast. A sharp wind set in, the rain fell heavily, and a dark mist drooping over the distant town hid it from the view. She often looked with compassion, at such a time, upon the stragglers who came wandering into London by the great highway hard by, and who, footsore and weary, and gazing fearfully at the huge town before them, as if foreboding that their misery there would be but as a drop of water in the sea, or as a grain of sea sand on the shore, went shrinking on, cowering before the angry weather, and looking as if the very elements rejected them. Day after day, such travelers crept past, but always, as she thought, in one direction, always towards the town. Swallowed up in one phase or other of its immensity, towards which they seemed impelled by a desperate fascination, they never returned. Food for the hospitals, the churchyards, the prisons, the river, fever, madness, vice, and death, they passed on to the monster, roaring in the distance, and were lost. The chill wind was howling, and the rain was falling, and the day was darkening moodily, when Harriet, raising her eyes from the work on which she had long since been engaged with unremitting constancy, saw one of these travelers approaching. A woman. A solitary woman of some 30 years of age, tall, well-formed, handsome, miserably dressed, the soil of many country roads in varied weather, dust, chalk, clay, gravel clotted on her gray cloak by the streaming wet, no bonnet on her head, nothing to defend her rich black hair from the rain, but a torn handkerchief, with the fluttering ends of which, and with her hair, the wind blinded her, so that she often stopped to push them back, and look upon the way she was going. She was in the act of doing so, when Harriet observed her. As her hands, parting on her sunburnt forehead, swept across her face, and threw aside the hindrances that encroached upon it. There was a reckless and regardless beauty in it, a dauntless and depraved indifference to more than weather, a carelessness of what was cast upon her bare head from heaven or earth, that, coupled with her misery and loneliness, touched the heart of her fellow woman. She thought of all that was perverted and debased within her, no less than without. Of modest graces of the mind, hardened and steeled, like these attractions of the person, of the many gifts of the Creator flung to the winds like the wild hair, of all the beautiful ruin upon which the storm was beating, and the night was coming. Thinking of this, she did not turn away with a delicate indignation to many of her own compassionate and tender sex who often do but pity her. Her fallen sister came on, looking far before her, trying with her eager eyes to pierce the mist in which the city was enshrouded, and glancing, now and then, from side to side, with the bewildered and uncertain aspect of a stranger. Though her tread was bold and courageous, she was fatigued, and after a moment of irresolution, sat down upon a heap of stones, seeking no shelter from the rain, but letting it rain on her as it would. She was now opposite the house, raising her head, after resting it for a moment on both hands, her eyes met those of Harriet. In a moment, Harriet was at the door, and the other, rising from her seat at her beck, came slowly, and with no conciliatory look, towards her. "Why do you rest in the rain?" " said Harriet, gently. "Because I have no other resting place," was the reply. "But there are many places of shelter near here." "This," referring to the little porch, "is better than where you were. You are very welcome to rest here." The wanderer looked at her, in doubt and surprise, but without any expression of thankfulness, and sitting down, and taking off one of her worn shoes to beat out the fragments of stone and dust that were inside, showed that her foot was cut and bleeding. Harriet uttering an expression of pity, the traveler looked up with a contemptuous and incredulous smile. "Why, what's a torn foot to such as me?" she said. "And what's a torn foot in such as me, to such as you?" "Come in and wash it," answered Harriet, mildly, "and let me give you something to bind it up." The woman caught her arm, and drawing it before her own eyes, hit them against it, and wept. Not like a woman, but like a stern man surprised into that weakness, with a violent heaving of her breast, and struggle for recovery, that showed how unusual the emotion was with her. She submitted to be led into the house, and, evidently more in gratitude than in any care for herself, washed and bound the injured place. Harriet then put before her fragments of her own frugal dinner, and when she had eaten of them, though sparingly, besought her, before resuming her road, which she showed her anxiety to dry her clothes before the fire. Again, more in gratitude than with any evidence of concern in her own behalf, she sat down in front of it, and unbinding the handkerchief about her head, and letting her thick wet hair fall down below her waist, sat drying it with the palms of her hands, and looking at the blaze. "I dare say you are thinking," she said, lifting her head suddenly, "that I used to be handsome, once. I know I was luckier." She held up her hair roughly with both hands, seizing it as if she would have torn it out, then, threw it down again, and flung it back, as though it were a heap of serpents. "Are you a stranger in this place?" asked Harriet. "A stranger." She returned, stopping between each short reply, and looking at the fire. "Yes. 10 or 12 years a stranger. I have had no almanac where I have been. 10 or 12 years. I don't know this part. It's much altered since I went away." "Have you been far?" "Very far. Months upon months over the sea, and far away even then. I have been where convicts go," she added, looking full upon her entertainer. "I have been one myself." apostrophe, heaven help you and forgive you. Apostrophe, apostrophe was the gentle answer. Ah, heaven help me and forgive me. Apostrophe, she returned, nodding her head at the fire. If man would help some of us a little more, God would forgive us all the sooner perhaps. Apostrophe, but she was softened by the earnest manner, and the cordial face so full of mildness, and so free from judgment, of her, and said, less heartily. We may be about the same age, you and me. If I am older, it is not above a year or two. Oh, think of that. Apostrophe, she opened her arms, as though the exhibition of her outward form would show the moral wretch she was, and letting them drop at her sides, hung down her head. There is nothing we may not hope to repair. It is never too late to amend, apostrophe said Harriet. You are penitent, no, apostrophe she answered. I am not. I can't be. I am no such thing. Why should I be penitent, and all the world go free? They talk to me of my penitence. Who's penitent for the wrongs that have been done to me? Apostrophe, she rose up, bound her handkerchief about her head, and turned to move away. Where are you going? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Harriet. Yonder, apostrophe, she answered, pointing with her hand. To London. Apostrophe, have you any home to go to? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I think I have a mother. She's as much a mother as her dwelling is a home, apostrophe, she answered with a bitter laugh. Take this, apostrophe, cried Harriet, putting money in her hand. Try to do well. It is very little, but for one day it may keep you from harm. Apostrophe, are you married? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the other, faintly, as she took it. No. I live here with my brother. We have not much to spare, or I would give you more. Apostrophe, will you let me kiss you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, seeing no scorn or repugnance in her face, the object of her charity bent over her as she asked the question, and pressed her lips against her cheek. Once more she caught her arm, and covered her eyes with it, and then was gone. Gone into the deepening night, and howling wind, and pelting rain, urging her way on towards the mist and shrouded city, where the blurred lights gleamed, and with her black hair, and disordered headgear, fluttering round her reckless face. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.